It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the FF Faceoff, where fantasy football is debated. Here are your hosts from the East Coast, who've never heard a bet they didn't like, Michael Hoff and Anthony Servino.
It's a Wednesday, so guess what that means? It's the FF Faceoff. We got a power hour. We got Anthony Servino at the Real NFL Guru. I'm Jim Coventry from RotoWire at Jim Coventry NFL. And if you watch the intro, you saw Josh Jacobs flexing. I think he should have had his hands out so he could catch a pass once in a while. So maybe they didn't sign Kenyon Drake to lots of millions of dollars while Josh Jacobs gets some early down inconsequential work for fantasy. Now that my rant is out of the way, Anthony Servino, how are you today?
Jim, I'm doing awesome. Just fixing my lighting over here, but really pumped and excited for this show.
Yeah, me as well. I always look forward to these Wednesdays. I know we totally bring it for everybody. We give you our very best every week. Our approach is quality over quantity, so we won't shoehorn in a couple extra teams when we preview because we want to give you the very best that we're capable of. Now, before we talk about teams, though, look, it's preseason time. It's June. There's news pieces from camps all over the place. But one of our biggest jobs, Anthony, is what to believe and what to ignore, because everybody's in the best shape of their lives right now. So what do you do with this avalanche of preseason information?
You know, I think you have to take everything with a grain of salt and really dig into who the source is, where the source is coming from. Like, if Peter King says something, that's one of the guys I will take. You know, I'll usually cash that check. But if it's a beat writer and it's the first year with the team and they're only a couple of years in, who knows where this information is coming from, because they've only been with that organization for a short amount of time.
Absolutely. And maybe some of these beat writers are even like, maybe they're feeling motivated just to overly pump up their team because they're really an arm for those teams. So yes, we tend to be very, very careful because Anthony and I have been around this news and breaking it down a long time, as many of you have. So look at this first piece. Noah Gray, the tight end of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Athletic's Nate Taylor says they're the Chiefs' more multiple tight end sets. Fifth round is a standout at minicamp. Tight ends don't break out very easily in the NFL and very early, and that's off of the first and the second round guys. What are we going to get from Noah Gray, Anthony?
I mean, in fantasy, unless Travis Kelce goes down, I don't think we're going to get very much. from Noah Gray. Sure, he could contribute, but what have other tight ends contributed for the Chiefs as a number two in the Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes era? Very little. What was it? Ricky Seals-Jones, Blake Bell, guys like that. Maybe one or two touchdowns, but nothing you want on your fantasy team.
No, they've given us a big number two. That's about all they've given us. Yeah, so no, not so much going on there. So, yes, you'll hear that news. A few people will try to move him up their draft board. But if you're moving him ahead of tight end 35 or so, think you're being a little overly aggressive there. T. Higgins, now Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, second-year T. Higgins, markedly more explosive this summer. What do we think?
You know, I thought I saw another piece on T. Higgins. I think maybe it was Burrow saying that he believes T. Higgins is going to have a big year. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of T. Higgins hype. He's the receiver going into year two in this system with Joe Burrow. But I've been buying into Ja'Marr Chase. You know, all things considered, Ja'Marr Chase isn't as expensive as T. Higgins. And if we see just a little bit of that magic that we saw from Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, I'd rather get Ja'Marr Chase ninth or 10th round versus T. Higgins, where I might have to pay a fifth or sixth average draft position.
You know, Ja'Marr Chase, as we are speaking here, I just did some ADP work from my friends over at FantasyMojo.com. And I'm going to look up, because I think Ja'Marr Chase, actually, he is going in June drafts as wide receiver 19.
Really?
So that means you're getting him in what, the fifth round, fourth round? I do see, when I look at the ADP, because there's so many style of drafts we're in, I take the positional ADP, because if you're in super flex, if you're in, you know, tight end premium, if I know what the positional ADP is, then at least that gives me the opportunity to say I can extrapolate that out in other scoring systems. T. Higgins, and I'm going to get right back to Anthony, T. Higgins here going as wide receiver 26. So Ja'Marr Chase is seven wide receivers ahead of T. Higgins.
See, I'm at Fantasy Football Calculator, and I guess where you're getting your ADP from matters. Ja'Marr Chase is going as a wide receiver 45.
Okay, so let me explain Fantasy Mojo. They take drafts from high-stakes leagues, primarily FFPC. They also do the Football Guys Player Championship. So they're two of the higher profile. So I, you know, personally, and I know you have to have a subscription. Darren Armani runs that over there. But I know Darren set me up on a subscription, and I always hype his site and use his ADP data. But you're right. There's many great sites. But I definitely always like to use that Fantasy Mojo, because when there's high stakes involved, you got a lot of skin in the game. I tend to take those pretty seriously, but certainly use the site you're using, of course, because there's merits to that. But these were June drafts only and higher stakes.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that, because I would like to start using more high stakes ADP on this show and really sticking to it.
Yeah, that skin in the game means everything, because, you know, if they're mock drafts, oh my gosh, you have people bailing out on those or trying all kinds of crazy radical stuff. Even if they're like cheap drafts, a lot of people will try a lot of crazy things if they're spending $5 or $10, you know, play 50 teams and just try all these radical different scenarios. So anyway, just something for fantasy managers to think about. A little more news here, but T. Higgins, my take on him. Well, I think there's a natural second-year progression. I think he was already making quite an exponential leap from week one until Joe Burrow got hurt. And even when he had horrible quarterback play from like week 12 to 16, he was still the wide receiver 30 in PPR leagues. And so, yeah, I think T. Higgins is a player, especially with these high-stakes ADPs. I think that people are maybe overreacting, giving the rookie Ja'Marr Chase a little too much credit, whereas T. Higgins, he was a 33rd pick in the draft, if I remember correctly. It's not like they have no draft capital in him. It's not, and he played in a much better wide receiver class than this one where Ja'Marr Chase is coming out. Now, I'm not questioning Ja'Marr Chase's athletic ability. He looks like he's going to be phenomenal. But T. Higgins may be too, Anthony. Thoughts there?
So you're buying more into T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase.
100%.
Or do you feel that Ja'Marr Chase's ADP in the high stakes leagues is too high? Would you be more apt? Let's say his ADP was more as the wide receiver 30. Are you more apt to grab Ja'Marr Chase at the wide receiver 30 versus the wide receiver 19? What is that threshold for you versus a T. Higgins?
So the proof in the pudding, I got my big board up right now. So I have T. Higgins listed as my wide receiver 22 with an, again, ADP current of 26. So I'll have shares of him because I have him four spots ahead of what the, you know, generic average drafts are right now. On the other hand, Ja'Marr Chase, I've got him as wide receiver 28. And I, you look, he's a rookie. And I get some rookies come in and do well, but it's not like he's coming into a situation with a nobody. I mean, T. Higgins, and I get that Ja'Marr Chase played college football with Joe Burrow, but T. Higgins played professional football with him in their system. And they built something last year. And I just don't think Burrow's going to be, oh, man, let's go to my college buddy. Let's just get him all. They're both going to get a lot of targets. And I don't know who's going to get doubled. I don't know if teams are going to take one, you know, as more of a threat than the other. But T. Higgins showed last year there's something there. He can play. He performed very well, and that was with an offense that had its share of problems. So I am definitely in on T. Higgins. I am way ahead of ADP. And based on what Chase is going at, if it is indeed wide receiver 19, I will have zero shares of him.
Is there a wide receiver three in this offense? Like, we know there's going to be a high-volume passing attack. We know that they want to get Joe Mixon more involved in the passing game. But there's really a little bit of a void at tight end. We don't really know what I'm drawing a blank on who the tight end of Cincinnati is.
C.J. Uzama's back.
Uzama's back. He had the Achilles last year. Yeah. And they lost John Ross. I think we're going to see a lot of Auden Tate as a third or fourth wide receiver. Anything here with an Auden Tate type of player?
And you know, Tyler Boyd's still there in the slot. Okay, so he's still going to, you know, I downgraded him. I am behind ADP on purpose. Look, he's a real nice player. He's a real nice slot guy. But if a quarterback has two very, very good outside receivers to throw to. And remember, they line up all over the formation anyway. I really think it's going to be Chase and Higgins seeing the lion's share of the targets. I don't think it's the world where Tyler Boyd is now getting a million dump-off passes because there's nobody else to throw the ball to. I think that he is really going to get squeezed out this year. He'll have his week, certainly. And the lack of an offensive line, that's going to get him some targets. But I have him at wide receiver 43, Tyler Boyd, that is. And he's being drafted as wide receiver 37, again, by per Fantasy Mojo right now. So as in terms of Auden Tate, they run some 10 personnel, but otherwise I think he needed an injury to become relevant because Boyd isn't going to really relinquish that inside role. He's so good there. Anything else you got on that one?
No, nothing else on Cincy, other receivers.
A couple other quick reports here as we're looking through here. Of course, I'm trying to scroll the screen right now. There were some defensive stories. Bradley Chubb, ankles expected to be ready for the start of training camp. Von Miller was cleared of all the issues he had offseason. So they have four legit corners. They now have two good pass rushers. And they have Vic Fangio calling the shots. If Chubb is indeed healthy, what are you expecting from this defense quickly, Anthony?
I think we're going to see a bounce back from the Denver defense. And it wasn't just Chubb that went down. There was a lot of injuries, on both sides of the ball. But that defense was decimated by injury. We know the type of defense that Fangio can put on the field. Now, you talk about the corners they have. They bring in the rookie. But notably, they have Bryce Callahan, who was a top 10 corner at Pro Football Focus before the injury. He was with Fangio in Chicago. They brought in Kyle Fuller. This is going to be one of the best cornerback units in the NFL, where they could probably go with just about any team in three and four wide receiver sets.
Yes, absolutely correct. Absolutely love that analysis there. I'm really looking forward to watching the Broncos play this year. Another defensive player. So Chris Jones of the Chiefs, we had a report that he's expected to play on the outside more. He's a devastating force inside on the defensive line, but it really has been the smartest thing they could have thought of all along, was getting him on the outside more, because that's going to change the dynamic of their passers. So I think he will play both. Those in IDP leagues on the outside should get him more sack situations, because rushing from the middle, a lot of quarterbacks, they know he's there and they're breaking out of the pocket to get away from Chris Jones. So I think this gives Chris Jones immense upside as a pass rusher and as a defensive lineman. He's not going to be listed as an edge or a linebacker on your IDP leagues. So I think he's a player you raise up your draft board. Anything on him?
Yeah, I like Chris Jones a lot. I actually have him. I play in quite a few different formatted IDP leagues. And when I'm drafting an IDP, I look at scoring system first. If it's more sack heavy, then I want players who are going to get sacks. If it's more an even balance, then I like the players like a middle linebacker who can get you a lot of tackles. But Chris Jones, in just about any format, he's going to bring a lot of value to the table.
Absolutely. Love him this year. Two things on the Seahawks before we move to a overall season thought, and then our two teams for today. And if you're still waiting, we're going to cover the 49ers and the Seahawks. We're going to have a little fun. But you know what? So maybe I'll save those Seahawks pieces of news for the Seahawks part. So we're just going to move to the thought, and then we'll go back to those. So first thing, this is very important. Look, you either love NFL football and you're watching us, or you love fantasy and you're watching us. In any case, the 2020 pandemic season, we saw many offensive records shattered. Now, fantasy players, fans, understand the 2020 season, it's not going to be that way this year. First of all, there were no fans in the stands. Road teams, they were able to audible at will. They could literally talk to their teammates. They could actually have a conversation with their teammates, and not just audible, but literally have a conversation. When there's fans in the stands, very, very difficult. And the more rabid stadiums, it's more difficult. But you are not communicating anywhere near that level. So that's the first thing. But another thing, this one is huge. Everybody remembers. Offensive holding calls. They went the way of the dinosaur last year. It was going on all over the place. And as teams realized it, they were holding more and more. Quarterbacks had cleaner pockets. They had more time to throw, and they were just absolutely shredding defenses right and left. So I am very concerned. It's going to be, what do you say? It's across the board. But if you're looking for these big numbers, expect most numbers to come down equal across the board. But just don't think we're going to see this insane yardage totals. What are your general thoughts there, Anthony?
You know, I think you're right there where – as much as COVID affected everything last year, the fact that we are getting back to a more normalized NFL and really sports world altogether, it's also going to affect things going the other way. We're not going to see as much explosive offenses like you said, but just because like people say, well, you know, they're going to have a normal camp. Everything's going to be normal for fantasy players. Well, everything's going to be normal for defense. And like I said to you off air, I think it's more important for the defense to have this extra time and this cohesiveness because the offense already knows the play that they're going to run. The defense needs to scheme against you.
Exactly correct.
And think about the injuries. One more thing. Injuries. We saw an increase in injuries. I expect players to, and the whole league's not going to stay healthy, but anomaly injury, like Dak Prescott never missed a game. Christian McCaffrey never missed a game. A lot of these players with these fluky injuries, we're not going to see them.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I want to add Julio Jones to that. Julio Jones would miss maybe a game. I think once it was two games in the previous 5 years. He misses seven last year. But even before he missed those games, he was struggling with hamstring injuries. Veteran players are used to every year. This is what we do in June, July, and August, and we're ready in September. They are very regimented. Anthony, you and I are both athletes, and we both train heavily, and we know how important routine is. Julio Jones, as an aged veteran in his 30s, he didn't get any of that routine. And I, couldn't be wrong. This is speculation. But without that routine, I believe that had a lot to do with why, for the first time in his career, Except, well, he had a way earlier in his career, had one season where he missed some games. But in a long time, that's why he missed games, in my opinion. I don't think it had anything to do with other than his training was changed. Any thoughts?
That's a really good point when you bring up being an athlete or even, you know, I'm avidly in the gym. And the more in tune I get with my body, because I've been hurt a lot with my neck, you know, for the past 10 years in and out. But when I get into my routine where I'm 2 or 3 years without an injury and I'm back, every little thing I eat, that could affect my workout the next day. That could make me stronger. It could be make me weaker. How much rest I take. Like, your body is like a machine. And think about how you are. And I'm an amateur. I'm nowhere near perfect. Think about what a professional athlete, they're training their body and how they eat. Like, these bodies of Julio Jones, and look at Tom Brady, they are built like machines until they stop. And then they get back to human life.
Right? And Tom Brady is the anomaly where he doesn't need the team program to get him going. He does so much on his own. He was the rare type of player that was never going to be affected by a change in training schedule. So anyway, understand there are some factors. I like that you brought up the injury thing, Anthony, because I think, as you said, the players that had those rare injuries that we didn't see them. No, we're back to normal this year. I completely think that fluke injuries can always happen, but don't look for those to be trends. And if you're discounting players in fantasy drafts because of one-year injuries, I think you may be overreacting a bit. All right, we're already halfway through the show. We got to get some teams here, Anthony. The last two of the NFC, 49ers. So look, injuries destroyed this team last year, both offensively and defensively. So very little can be taken from the 2020 49ers campaign. Remember, the prior year, they made it to the Super Bowl and lost to the Chiefs. We won't say that they could have won that game because we'll get some people upset, so we won't go there. Now, the offensive line, per Sports Info Solutions, they were 7th percentile last year. Injuries killed them as well. So that was just one of those things that happened. Look, now they're very good at tackle and center. They should be vastly improved this year. They have a stable of running backs. I know Jeffrey Wilson's probably starting the year on the PUP list, but they have a stable of backs that should ensure they have an elite running game. Look, we know that Raheem Mostert didn't have the year we wanted last year, but they drafted Trey Sermon. I'm a big fan of Elijah Mitchell, who they drafted in the 7th round. If you like Wayne Gallman, he's in the mix, but they have people who can get put in to that Shanahan run system. Also, if Kittle, Ayuk, and Debo are healthy, they could rival any trio in the NFL. And we'll talk about receivers specifically later, but I think that's the best trio of run after to catch players in the league. Now, they run as plays at a fast pace. They were the 9th fastest team. They're in the middle of the league in their run-pass balance, which is good. Shanahan always looks for it to keep defense on their heels. They lead the league in play action, which gives their quarterbacks great looks. They freeze the linebackers, leads to big plays. And also, Shanahan helps the quarterbacks by giving them above-average pre-snap motion. We saw how much Ayuk and Samuel were in that motion. It was huge. So this is going to be good. So the overall outlook of the team, again, it's going to be a pretty fast pace. We know what Shanahan does. He's going to help his quarterbacks, his playmakers. What's a generic picture of the team before we go positionally, Anthony?
You know, the 49ers, they're one of those teams that we see a lot of plug and play, a lot of system guys in this offense, and really their defense too, at least with Robert Saleh there. But San Francisco, they always seem like they're a quarterback away. They drafted Trey Lance, but as long as Jimmy Garoppolo's on this team, I believe he's going to open the year as a starter, and I think they ride Jimmy Garoppolo, who has taken them to a Super Bowl until the wheels eventually come off, whether he gets hurt or, you know, but obviously if he wins 14 games, he's not going anywhere immediately. But this 49ers team altogether, whether it's Garoppolo or Lance under center, I'm buying into them for a fantasy football purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll cover the individual positions. I like your comment right where it was, but let's naturally segue into the quarterback spot. Now, I did read a piece of news, and I thought this was interesting, that the coaching staff said that Trey Lance will have a chance to climb the depth chart this preseason. That comment is huge, whereas the Bears are saying Andy Dalton's our week one starter. We know that Shanahan is not happy with Garoppolo. He doesn't want any part of him. He would get rid of him if he could. look, they traded up to get Trey Lance, and they gave up a lot. We all thought they were going for whichever quarterback, maybe Mac Jones, but obviously Shanahan knew what he wanted. Anyway, think back. In 2012, I believe, RG3. Who was his offensive coordinator? Oh, wait, it was Kyle Shanahan. Remember how explosive that offense was? There, and this is the line I always use, there were receivers running wide ass open downfield because of that development of the offense with a mobile quarterback. I think that's what Kyle Shanahan is reimagining. So anyway, I believe Shanahan wants that ability to run from Trey Lance to make his offense lethal. His offense could be good with Jimmy Garoppolo, but he believes it can be lethal with a mobile quarterback. Now, again, so not knowing if he'll start day one, that hurts the redraft value. But if you're in best ball, oh my gosh, Trey Lance's value is sky high, because if and when he starts, seriously, look out. Thoughts on who's going to start week one? And I'll go a little further on that, Anthony.
You know, I still believe it's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo. That, of course, unless they move him, and we'll see how it falls out with, obviously, Deshaun Watson and what's going on in Miami after a terrible practice from Tua and Jacoby Brissett yesterday. But let's say they do give Trey Lance the week one starting job. Whenever they announce it, I expect Trey Lance to be drafted as a QB1. Not a high QB1, but right around where you're drafting Jalen Hurts, never seeing him play an NFL snap. Am I off here or?
No, I don't think you're off at all. But you're intimating this. It's all where things go with reports in this next month. I drafted about 2 weeks ago, and it was a best ball league, and I got Lance as my QB3, which, you know, I thought that was beautiful value because I'm not counting on him. As long as he's starting by week 10, I'm in great shape, right? So I thought that was great. But like you said, if there's any inkling he's going to start, yeah, a running quarterback. I think there are enough sharp people in the fantasy community that realize it is such a mismatch when you have a running quarterback. I have Jalen Hurts as my QB6, and he ain't moving because he can run. And that's all that matters. He's going to run for nearly 1,000 yards. That's just what's going to happen. There's no if, unless he gets hurt. But he's not even like a tiny dude. So that running ability, and I say this on multiple shows, Tim Tebow was a QB1, and he couldn't throw the ball. That tells you all you ever need to know. Taysom Hill last year. Taysom Hill put up massive fantasy numbers. So you tell me Kyle Shanahan's offense? Trey Lance? Sure. I don't even have to know if he can throw. But I know one thing. There's going to be guys running wide ass open down the field. And Anthony, you or I might be able to make some of those throws.
Yeah, you have to really buy into Trey Lance at some point. Again, in best ball, as you've alluded to, you take a shot, you know, as a late round quarterback, because right now he still is the backup. But in redraft, I will take shots on Trey Lance as a top 12 quarterback if he is named the starter. Even if there's a week before the season, that's when a lot of fantasy drafts actually take place. You have to move him up.
Absolutely.
And even if he can't throw, you just have to get the ball in the vicinity of these receivers and the tight end, and they have the run after the catch ability to take it to the house. People forget just how good Deebo Samuel was before that injury. George Kittle with the yards after the catch. And we know what IU can do from recency bias.
If we remember, there's a late season game against the Rams. Now, I know they're divisional opponents. We understand this. They play, you know, a little tougher when they have that familiarity. The Rams were playing for playoff seeding. The 49ers were done for the year. Their season was over. 49ers won that game. The concern was, oh, how are the receivers going to get open? They didn't have to. Kyle Shanahan got them the ball at or behind the line of scrimmage. He led them directly into space. I don't have the stats in front of me. I want to say Ayuk went for like 150 yards. And I could be wrong. So understand, I don't have the numbers in front of me. But he was literally catching the ball, open chasm, go. And they couldn't have an answer for it because that's not a typical offense. Jalen Ramsey didn't know what the hell to do because there was nobody to get sticky against because there were rub routes, and those are huge. The rub routes are huge. Just getting these guys open and in space. So you're right. You don't have to be a great quarterback in a system, but that running ability is going to be beautiful if he gets in there. Let's move to running back. So, as we said earlier, Jeff Wilson will start the season most likely 90% of the PUP list, should miss the first 6 weeks. Raheem Mostert, we had that great run in the late fantasy season in 2019 through the NFL playoffs. He was great there. They trade up to get Trey Sermon. As everybody knows who's listening to me, I love Elijah Mitchell. Elijah Mitchell runs a 97th percentile 40 time. His explosiveness from his pro day, 87th percentile. His agility, 79th percentile. He's 5'10", 201. Not a tiny dude, not a big dude. But I think that if he gets in there at all, he is going to make it difficult to keep him off the field. But Trey Sermon should have a bit of a leg up at 6'2", 215. Mostert, we know that from last year. The odds of him holding up could be very difficult. How are you handicapping this backfield, Anthony?
Listen, I'm buying into Trey Sermon in a big way. And this is a crowded backfield, but when Jeff Wilson went down, we know he's going to miss a minimum of 6 games on the PUP, but this was a tear. There's no guarantee he's back after 6 games. We know that Raheem Mostert misses a lot of time. He's effective when he's in, but you know, I think he's missed like 15 games in the past 2 years. I have to double check that, which means we could see Wayne Gallman and Trey Sermon on the field. But what Trey Sermon has in his favor is the fact that he's a third-round draft pick, and the last time Kyle Shanahan drafted a running back was in 2017, his first year, which was fourth-round running back Joe Williams. And Trey Sermon is the highest-graded running back, the highest capital running back that he's ever taken. Kyle Shanahan likes something in Trey Sermon that he can bring to this offense. And as you alluded to, if he gets on the field, I don't think he's coming off.
You know, it was a great argument. So you mentioned Joe Williams. I think he just killed Kyle Shanahan's credibility with
running
backs.
In the fourth round, 2017.
Oh, believe me, I had him in a dynasty league at that point. I figured, well, you know, if Kyle Shanahan likes him, right? See where that ended up for me. Not so well. But you're right. And Sermon has great explosiveness, 81st percentile, great agility, 79th percentile for a 215-pound dude. Now he's slow. He's very slow, 28th percentile 40, and speed adjusted is only 30th percentile. So he's a very slow dude. Now, fantasy managers remember how fast Raheem Mostert looked. His 40 time was only 73rd percentile, where Elijah Mitchell's 97th. Elijah Mitchell can blow smoke rings around Raheem Mostert. And so if Mitchell gets in there, even if he's a compliment change of pace, we've seen it before. Shanahan will split carries because they do like to run a lot. I am still saying you can't put heavy fantasy draft capital into Elijah Mitchell. But if you have a deeper draft and you're looking for a late round guy, there's a world where Sermon and Mitchell can come out really well. Now, Mostert could get in the way of that. But if Mitchell gets on that field and gets a chance, and we know that Shanahan system grinds up running backs and they get injured a lot because, and here's why. People always want to know. Why do Shanahan running backs get hurt? Well, what they do is on the zone run, they go to their spot and they're expected to dig their foot in the ground and completely change direction on a dime. That is very, very difficult on the ankles and on the knees of those running backs. And the laundry list of knee and ankle injuries to Shanahan running backs is very, very high. And I believe it's because of the violent type of running it is expected. And so at some point, Mitchell gets a chance. I like your call on Sermon. And like I said, base other than being slow, the other measurables are outstanding. And at 215, he's going to be rugged. And that's going to be really helpful there. So again, keep your eye open because there's always value in the Shanahan backfield. Let's move the receiver, Anthony. So basically, last year, Ayuk was hurt for a while. Debo was hurt a lot. And they had issues on and off throughout the season. Well, they need to stay healthy, because their third receiver is Richie James. And I know Richie James had the one good game when he came in relief, but at the end of the day, he's good, but he's not Debo or Brandon Ayuk. So anyway, it's really a two-man game there, and that's going to be important. But it's, again, very narrow receiving tree, and they have George Kittle as well, and I know he's a tight end, but consider him a receiver as well when he's out in the pattern. So all of these guys could do well in a balanced offense. Maybe they're better in best ball than redraft, but I still think they're very good in redraft as well. But like George Kittle, injury concerns, games where he blocks all game. We'll talk about him later. We'll do specifics later. Anyway, let's talk about this. So we talked earlier. Shanahan schemes his receivers open. Deebo Samuel gets a lot of work at or near the line of scrimmage, gets right into space. They use him also on reverses. They use him on those little jet sweeps. Very, very effective. He gets good rushing yardage. So he has a lot of upside. Ayuk was the real deal as a rookie. He was used more as the downfield guy than Deebo Samuel, but both had beautiful roles. They're equally schemed open. I personally think Brandon Ayuk has a path to becoming a top 12 receiver. We don't always know what the passing volume is going to be. Again, if either gets hurt, Richie James could move into a prominent role. What's your look at the 49ers receiving core?
I like the 49ers receivers. Obviously, there is a drop-off at Richie James because they did lose this offseason. Kendrick Bourne, he's over in New England now. What concerns me is the health of this receiving core. Now, Brandon Ayuk, as you said, he missed four games. We know Deebo only played in seven. Deebo has this little bit of an injury history now. And I like Brandon Ayuk. He really flashed last year. You bring up he can finish as a wide receiver one. I can see all that happening. And the good thing for Ayuk, that all the injuries last year, you know, not the best quarterback play. Kittle wasn't on the field. Deebo wasn't on the field a lot. So Ayuk, it wasn't like he had somebody pulling coverage away. He had to play against the best of the best on the other side. My concern is, where am I drafting Deebo Samuel? Because I really have to take in consideration, even though I love the system and I love the way they use him, I have to take in consideration his injury history at this point. Because his ADP last year was pretty high for Deebo. And, mm-hmm. and obviously, and when you play in seven games, and he did not deliver.
This year, again, from Fantasy Mojo, high stakes drafts in the last month, Deebo Samuel is going off as wide receiver 36. So he's being drafted as a low-end wide receiver 3, standard 12-team leagues. At least it's better than last year. Because I think, honestly, last year he was a bit higher than that.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah.
So the injury discount is there. If he's in the lineup, if he plays 12, 13 games, I think he easily beats that value. But again, I like him better in a best ball league because, as we said earlier, if the 49ers, we haven't talked about the defense, we will later. If they're better on defense, there are games the coaching staff is content to run the ball if they have a lead. They aren't going to have to press the passing game. They won't necessarily do that. And that's why I have a little bit of apprehension about the receivers, although I love them both and there's plenty of upside. Again, I like them a little better in best ball than I do in redraft. I'll have shares in both places. I'll be more aggressive after them in best ball. Do you have any difference like that in terms of best ball and redraft?
I would rather have – I'll take either one in best ball, but if I had to take one in redraft, it's Brandon Ayuk. He was actually 16th in fantasy points per game last year. 12 games, 97 targets. So I'm content. If there's going to be a receiver that eats in that offense, it's going to be Brandon Ayuk.
Yes, and from weeks 12 to 16, he was the wide receiver 10, which is even just a little bit better than he was otherwise. So, yeah, just monstrous ability there. And, again, he is the guy when those downfield shots. It's he and Kittle. Those are the two guys that get schemed for downfield passes, which is pretty cool, which brings us to George Kittle. So, look, Kittle missed 8 games last year. He had 634 yards in the 8 games he played. So that's, we can extrapolate with him because we know who Kittle is. That's a 1,270-yard pace. So it's real good pace. And don't forget that this guy is one of the absolute best physical freaks of the position. 97th percentile 40 for a tight end, 89th percentile explosion, and the one I love best, 100th percentile agility. He is the man, and he is just an animal, and we love that. But like we said earlier, there are weeks when he's going to block when the team has a lead and they don't need to throw. We saw that at the end of the 2019 season, especially in the playoffs. He was just basically a sixth offensive lineman. So he may not see that number of targets he deserves. Now, again, extrapolating, he saw 63 targets in 8 games. It's realistic to say he would have gotten the 126 in the 16 games. So the targets still are fine. And his big play ability at the position is unrivaled. I think you make a case maybe Noah Fant has that type of big play ability, but Kittle does it in so many different ways, and he's established himself as that. So, again, he has many paths to an elite season. He's the best weapon on their offense. You can argue with me on that if you'd like, but he won't be ignored in the play calling because even though he will block, Kyle Shanahan knows what he can get from his superstar tight end.
Now, if you painted a picture, a best ball versus redraft picture, and it was Kittle and it was Kelce, I'd rather have Kelce in redraft, and I'll take Kittle in best ball because, yeah, Kittle played in 8 games last year. He was 3rd in fantasy points per game. But if you look at what he's done, he had 2 games in out of the first 4 that he's played in, he had 23 and 40 points. If you look at the rest of the body of work, the remaining 6 games that he played in, he had fewer than 13 points, including 3 games in the single digits. That's a huge variance. I'd rather have that in best ball. But if I'm
absolutely
at a second, third round ADP, usually a second, I feel like I need better than that. Like, I don't know if I'm taking George Kittle that high right now.
Right, right. No, it makes total sense. So the type of league is very important here. Now, I understand most of the fantasy community now has Darren Waller ahead of George Kittle. Here's my argument, though. The argument for Waller is basically that the Raiders will continue to be a 0 at wide receiver. And maybe they will. Maybe Henry Ruggs sucks. Maybe he's never going to be anything. Maybe Bryan Edwards, who actually had a respectable first 2 games before he got hurt and then wasn't heard from the rest of the year. And maybe they will be terrible. Maybe nothing will work out. Maybe John Brown will just be toast. And if their receivers are as bad as they were last year, yes, Darren Waller is going to see all the targets he can handle, and he is definitely going to be right behind Travis Kelce. But personally, I think there's a decent chance they get some production out of their wide receivers. And I think that some of those routes that Waller was getting are going to get shifted over to receivers. I don't think they want him to be their wide receiver 1, because that's what he was. He was their wide receiver 1 and their wide receiver 2. Well, Aguilar, I guess you'd say, was 2 with the deep shots. But that said, I think that people are expecting Waller to get a million targets. I have Kittle ahead of him because I think regardless of situation, even if they run the ball, Kittle is still going to get his targets. I know he's been hurt. I get it. Tight end's a tough position. He blocks a lot. But I am one of the few. I'm keeping Kittle ahead of him. But I understand what you said earlier, Anthony, about redraft leagues and Kittle.
Listen, I don't know. Like, outside of Kelce, I don't know how much of Kittle or Waller I'm going to have. Honestly.
Agreed.
I'd rather wait on tight end. And, I've been in a situation, especially in best ball, where I'm doubling down on Jonnu Smith. He's going late in underdog, and Hunter Henry.
Much agreed. Yeah. And so I think that's I think for Anthony and I, we make the same point. Wherever we rank them is for listeners and viewers, because we're not spending the draft capital to get either of them. At that point of the draft, we're taking a running back, we're taking a high-end receiver. If it's super flex, we're taking a quarterback maybe. But we're neither of us are going to have shares. I had a chance to get Kittle in a draft about 6 weeks ago, and I went with a receiver there. It was just much safer to me.
There's always that guy in the Scott Fishbowl who starts his draft with 4 tight ends or like 4 quarterbacks. There's always,
yeah, no doubt.
They'll tweet about it. I started Kittle, Kelce, Pitts. Like, come on. Really?
That is so funny. Everybody's got to kind of do their thing. There was something I pointed out about Kittle. Let me just this is going to take me a second here. But I want to say that Kelce had some incredible, like, high finish. It was a couple of years ago. I'm not going to waste our time. I'll get back to another show. All right. Let's talk about the defense before we move on. 49ers lose Robert Saleh, the coordinator. Richard Sherman at corner is gone, not likely to return. Nick Bosa will be back, expected healthy. They'll have a pass rush. It could be great if Dee Ford can finally get healthy and be what he's been. Cornerback play is looking like it's probably going to be shaky, so they're going to need that pass rush. Safety and linebacker play should be well above average. I think overall they're going to be a solid defense. They're going to be good, but I don't think spectacular if the corners struggle. And I don't think their pass rush is so elite that their corners are going to get away with covering for short periods of time. And I think the coaching change is going to be a little bit hurtful. What are your thoughts on the defense?
Listen, as I said last week, when we were talking about the Rams, I think that the coordinator loss is going to be huge. I think it's going to be the same thing in San Francisco. This defense is a little bit older. There was some turnaround. I know they traded what's his name last year to the Colts, and they drafted Kinlaw.
DeForest Buckner.
I don't think Kinlaw is not playing up to that what they were expecting to get, like a plug and play DeForest Buckner. He doesn't grow on trees. There was a lot of injuries to this defense last year. We're not going to see that 2019 Super Bowl defense or whenever they made it from the 49ers. I think they're closer to a middle of the pack defense who are going to, they could be dominant against the right opponent, but they're yes. Don't expect a top 10 fantasy defense or anything from this unit.
No, and they're being overdrafted in fantasy. They definitely are. They're being drafted on a 2019 rep. And I am totally with you. I love Bosa, but Dee Ford hasn't consistently been good in a few years. He did well in the playoff run in 2019, but that was they were hoping he would get on the field because I think it was hamstring injury he was dealing with, but he made it strong through the playoffs. But yes, absolutely correct. And again, losing Richard Sherman hurts because even though he was advanced in age, he was still pretty much locking down a side.
Listen, and you can't, how long can we count on Jason Verrett at this point? When he's healthy, he's great, but this is another guy injury wise, like, dude can't stay on the field.
No. And I think his middle name should be like Day to Day.
Wow.
It might be Hour to Hour at this point now, right? All right, let's move on to our Seattle Seahawks.
1 minute at a time, Verrett.
Yes. Good stuff, man. All right, Seattle Seahawks, our last team for today. So it was a tale of two halves in 2020. They went from riches to rags. Overall in the season, they were in the middle of the league in play action and pre-snap motion. They need to be better. They need to up those numbers. And hopefully, Shane Waldron, the new offensive coordinator, fixes that. Now, Waldron was the passing game coordinator for the Rams since 2018. That includes the year they made it to the Super Bowl. Is possibly make those fixes as long as Pete Carroll's not hovering, saying, we got to run the ball. Now, there was a June report recently, like last week or so, it stated the Rams expected to run up-tempo with Waldron and use more short passing concepts, as opposed to those deep strikes that made them predictable and easy to defend with cover two down the stretch. That was the one thing that killed them. Cover two, they were just too predictable, easy to slow down. Now, again, this should go away, though, because we said they're going to pick up the pace. Good, because they were bottom of the third of the league in pace last year. They did pass at the 10th highest rate. But again, that was real heavy first half of the season and then real low second half. So again, the coaching is going to be critical here. Pete Carroll staying out of the way is going to be critical, and we don't know what really is going to happen there. Last thing, before we talk about positions, they added Gabe Jackson to the line. Now, Dwayne Brown is complaining about money right now. I don't think they have the money to put them, but if for some reason, and I think it'd be foolish financially for him to hold out, if he ends up doing that, that would be a problem. But with Dwayne Brown and Gabe Jackson on the line, Russell Wilson seems a lot happier. Overall state of the team before we go to positions, Anthony.
Listen, I don't know if balance is the right word, because balance is something, you know, or closer to run heavy is what we've seen from Seattle in the past. But when I say balance, I think of last year, where Seattle, it was like a tale of two different teams. In the first half of the year, their defense was almost historically bad, and that offense had to score points. In the second half, it was like a complete 180, where the offense couldn't get out of its own way, and then the defense was playing like, you know, the 86 Giants or whatever.
Carlos Dunlap.
The trade deadline, right?
That was it. And Jamal Adams was freed up more because that they had some pass rush. Isn't that crazy how that works? One little move, and you're right.
But what happened to the offense?
Here's what happened. Good. I'm glad you asked that question. So here's what happened. The offense, it was just lockstep. They defenses were planned for the prior versions of the Seahawks. Well, Russell Wilson's taking all these deep shots. He's Lockett, Metcalf, nobody can stop him deep. All of a sudden, the book came out. Wait a minute, play cover two against them. And they put the shell over the top. All of a sudden, Russell Wilson was figured out. Russell Wilson had no chance because there were too many bodies back in the secondary. And when you're blanketing, and see, here's the thing. You could play cover two. Then you have to switch to other pass routes. They didn't have the imagination on offense to change the route combinations. If they had done that, they would have forced the shell down, and then they could have been multiple in their offense, and then they could have picked and chosen how they would go, short, medium, deep. They were literally screen pass or bomb. That's what they became, and they had no solution. I think Shane Waldron, if allowed to do his job, having worked with McVay, and I'm not that guy, if you work with McVay, you're special. I think McVay has his issues. But I still think, nonetheless, with the weapons he has, I think, and we'll talk about the specific guys later, I think Waldron is in a great spot to take an elite quarterback with good and the elite DK Metcalf. I think they really can break defenses if they play properly.
Yeah.
Anything else on it?
No, I'll buy into that. And I don't think it's just DK Metcalf. They gave Tyler Lockett the extension and they lost David Moore, but they drafted Eskridge. And I think they brought in Gerald Everett, which I love for that tight end room. The overall passing game, as long as they let Russell Wilson open it up, I think they're going to take a step up and be a little bit more consistent. I'm especially high, and I'm sure we'll talk about him later, on Gerald Everett.
We definitely will. Absolutely. We don't want to miss that one. Well, running back room. So I'll talk a little bit in a moment, but I was actually getting pretty excited about Rashad Penny. Call me a sucker. And then, of course, what news comes out today? Seahawks coach Pete Carroll said Rashad Penny underwent a minor knee surgery, but is expected to be ready for training camp. Well, gee, thanks. The few times we've seen Penny on the field, the dude looks explosive. 89th percentile 40 times, size adjusted is 93rd. We see in very limited action, he is explosive at 220 pounds. Chris Carson was talking up Rashad Penny earlier in the preseason, like literally excited they were going to be a 1-2 punch. Rashad Penny was going very late, obviously, in drafts. And I was thinking, oh, we got a little bit of an advantage here. Now this thing of a knee injury is an issue. But let me give my little overview of the position. I want to hear your thoughts, Anthony. So, look, Chris Carson, excellent runner. He's a good receiver. He can thrive even if the team goes pass heavy. Penny, like we said, if he's healthy, super explosive. It would be a devastating duo of running backs, especially if they open the passing game up properly. If Penny gets healthy and he's too good, it really could cut into Carson's upside. But the injury now makes it really feel better about Carson as, RB16, RB18. What are your thoughts about this running back room?
The re-signing of Chris Carson, we did a free agency show, and the two big ones, I thought the best landing spot for Carson and Aaron Jones was staying where they came from. We're not ever leaving Green Bay or Seattle. So this is great for Chris Carson. The fact that Rashad Penny is a little bit banged up, I never want a player to get hurt. But if Chris Carson's going to get his normal workload as long as Rashad Penny is off the field. When Rashad Penny is on the field, and was more notable in at the end of 2019, we know he could pop. We know he had that 3 touchdowns in 2-game stretch. We know he could put up the yardage. It's a matter of injury. And this latest injury news, it's not even training camp yet. To me, this pushes him behind in the depth chart, not only in fantasy, but on the Seattle Seahawks, because at some point, they're going to deem you undependable. I mean, look how the career of CJ Procy shook out. Same type of, direction, can never stay on the field, look good when he was on the field, but eventually now CJ Procise is in where? Houston, one of those teams.
Yeah, sounds like Houston. I think
Tampa,
that's correct. I think.
Tampa.
Oh, that's right. Tampa with all the pass catching running backs. Keyshawn Vaughn, Gio Bernard.
Or Maine Pope.
That's right. So behind them, I mean, DJ Dallas has very unimpressive measurables, but he had an 81st percentile broken tackle rate, 62nd percentile yards after contact. So he made the most of his opportunities. Travis Homer, who is much more athletically gifted, 94th percentile explosiveness, 52nd agility, 84th 40 time. He really was not good when he was on the field. So DJ Dallas potentially at 5'10", 217 could steal time away from Penny if Penny is hurt again. So something to think about. One last thing about Carson. Carson caught 37 balls in 12 games. That's pace of 50 catches. And realistically, that's a big boost for a guy when he first came in who thought would just be a thumper.
Yeah, I like Chris Carson, the pass catcher. We saw him really flash last year. It might have been in that Dallas game where he did some damage as a receiver. I can't remember which game it was. But I like Carson as a receiver. It adds value in PPR especially. And again, if this offense is open up, there's going to be a lot more underneath stuff for Chris Carson to work with. But if Rashad Penny is not on the field, I don't feel like DJ Dallas or Travis Homer did enough last year to cut into Chris Carson's workload that much. I just won't buy. I'd rather buy into Alex Collins if he makes the roster. Really?
Yeah, man, I just had to laugh because Alex Collins had his good year. I think the next year was like maybe the first Kings Classic, and I was real 14-team league. I'm like, you know what? I think I might be able to get three running backs early. My third running back was Alex Collins. Not so good. Not so good. But that has nothing to do with your comment. It just reminded me of one of my many fantasy football mistakes. But I've learned a little bit, hopefully. All right, let's move over to wide receiver here. All right. DK Metcalf, you know what? Say what you want. He came into the league raw 2 years ago. Fourth percentile agility. Everybody knew it. 6'4", 229, 99th percentile speed, 97th percentile explosive. The dude's running track, of course. And he can outrun you. He can go through you. He can run over you. It makes no difference. He is still learning the game. He is going to benefit from a new offensive coordinator. He was run way too predictably, and he still had 1,300 yards in the second half of the season where the offense did nothing. If that offense kept going at that clip, he would have probably flirted with 1,600. That said, they're going to use him better this year because the coaching staff can only improve. Tyler Lockett. He was apparently dealing with some injury concerns down the stretch, but the offense went in the tank anyway. So I don't know if it was injury. I don't know if it was the predictability. But again, he suffered badly. 100 catches for 1,054 yards, only 10 yards a catch from Tyler Lockett. That was a little bit disappointing. You mentioned Dwayne Eskridge comes in. Well, 5'9", 190. Measurables, he's very average across the board. His 40 times good, but for his size, it's not good. He's right about 50th in explosiveness and in terms of agility. He's also, I think, missing some camp time. I don't have the report in front of me. I still think it's a two-receiver game here, and we'll talk about Everett later. What are your thoughts on Metcalf? How good can this dude be?
The sky's the limit for DK Metcalf, and he was in the PPR points in the double digits in 12 out of 16 games last year, had a terrific start, fell off down the stretch and at the end of the year, which could have cost some people fantasy championships, but that's more on the offense and the defense knowing what's coming than DK Metcalf himself. You know, he's a couple of games in the second half away from being one of the more consistent players in the NFL, and his upside, it's certainly in the wide receiver one tier somewhere. I don't know how high. Maybe if he was on a bigger volume, passing volume offense, you could call him top five, but not in this current situation. I can't.
You know, it is the targets ultimately. Now, you know, Pete Carroll didn't take the reins off the passing game until they started to implode. They had a couple of bad games, and then he took the reins back. Oh, you see? But it was his coaches. It wasn't the passing game. It was the predictability, as we've talked about. If Waldron comes in and they're allowed to pass and Russ is cooking, as we called it last year, good coaching will allow him to continue to cook because they'll make adjustments that the former staff was incapable of making. NFL is all about adjustments. Seriously, you could double DK Metcalf. It don't matter. You could triple him. He'll go over you. It does not matter. But as you said, Anthony, if they don't have the passing volume, you can't put him at the very, very top of the list. But if they do, and if this coach, Waldron, Shane Waldron, is able to make them explosive in the passing game, Metcalf could easily be there with anybody. But you're right, 100% right, Anthony. How about Lockett?
You know, Lockett, his price point seems to be going in the wrong direction. He's starting to be deemed, at least in my eyes, as a high variance boom bust player. At this point in time, Tyler Lockett, I only like him in best ball. And because of that variance, and when he pops, we know he really pops, but then he'll disappear. If you remember what he did, he had that one big week three against my Cowboys, goes for 37, wide receiver one. And two straight weeks with single-digit points, and then he pops for 53, and then he goes for 7 and 8. And he was really never consistent, and if he wasn't really popping, then he was giving you games in the single digits. And this is another best ball receiver that you, even in best ball, the wide receiver or the overall 49th player taken at underdog, I can't do it.
No, I am with you on that. It is way, way too volatile. I do, again, think the coaching could have something to do with that, but we've just seen too much of a track record of this. And again, I know the coaching has always been slanted to the run and lack of creativity, but Lockett's going into, what, his seventh year? 2015 he came in, so this should be like a seventh year in the league. Yeah. At this point, we kind of are what we are. We know there's some upside, but there's just – he can be taken out of the game in many different ways. And – just not willing. He right. can't win on his own consistently, whereas Metcalf can. A little bit different there. Gerald Everett's in a tight end, and I know I can tell that you're as excited as I am. Gerald Everett, you know, the one thing I like is he had flashes where he was ready to explode in LA and injury set in, never worked out. He was drafted to be Sean McVay's version 2.0 of Jordan Reed. That's what he was drafted to be. 88th percentile 40 time, 93rd percentile explosiveness, and 82nd percentile agility. He's not the athletic marvel of the top end guys, but he is way, way, way above average here. Waldron coached him. Waldron realized what he is. I'm sure he had a lot of input as to what's going on. And with this Seattle team really not having a solidified number three, Gerald Everett, they could run 12 personnel and use him as the detached tight end. And I believe he could function as that wide receiver three at 6'3", 240, and really give them a tactical advantage. Before I turn you, Anthony, look, Russell Wilson has made some very suboptimal tight end players fantasy friendly, not for full seasons, but he's made some real athletic stiffs look good as tight ends. Gerald Everett could blow up here.
Yeah, I'm buying into Gerald Everett. There's no more Tyler Higbee holding him back. There's no more Jared Goff holding him back. You brought up productive tight ends for Russell Wilson. They all weren't Jimmy Graham or talented like a Jimmy Graham was. We even saw Ed Dixon have a couple of games, a few games he was healthy in Seattle. Will Disley, the only reason why he's a name in fantasy is because the small body of work, he was a touchdown machine in this offense. And if they wanted to run personnel, you can do that with Will Disley playing in line. But with Gerald Everett coming here, the familiarity, the athleticism, and the lack of a third option that's not a running back, I really have to buy into Gerald Everett and the ceiling, because I think you said it on one of the last shows, you know, outside the first few tight ends, there's not much of a difference. Well, Gerald Everett can potentially bring a difference-making ceiling to kind of put him at the top of that second or third level of tight end group.
Yeah, I will definitely have shares of Gerald Everett in leagues where I have to have two tight ends. In a league where I draft a later tight end and definitely need a second one to hedge, he's a great hedge pick. Where you're getting him in drafts, that is not an issue at all, because you are not wasting significant draft capital in him. Now, I will say in the high stakes leagues, again, fantasymojo.com, they're ADP ranks from June. He's actually going as tight end 19, which is a little higher than I thought he would go. I thought he'd be more like 23, 24. But again, in the higher stakes leagues, some people realize the athleticism's there, probably realize Shane Waldron's there, and of course, Russell Wilson. And like I like how you said that, Anthony, he gets away from Jared Goff. That's huge.
You know, and they lost, obviously, Greg Olsen retired, but they also lost Hollister, and they like using Hollister all over that formation. So that opens up more opportunity for these tight ends to stay on the field.
Exactly. Well, defensively, let's finish up there. Cornerbacks look like they'll be awful. DJ Reed, Othello Witherspoon, Pierre Desir, ouch. it's a rugged group. And now they do have Carlos Dunlap, who had the trade deadline acquisition on the defensive end last year. He gets a pass rush, so that helps him be decent. KJ Wright is not with the team as of now. It looks like he's not wanting to, play for what they're going to pay him. And I know linebackers, to me, they're not really relevant anymore, but he has been a linchpin player of that defense for a long time. He was still good. And their linebacking group as a whole really needs him. And we also know that there's some strife right now with their all-world safety, Jamal Adams, who's crowing about money right now.
Yeah, they should have saw this coming with Jamal Adams coming from the Jets, because that was obviously his issue there on top of coaching, locker room, Le'Veon Bell, everything else that Jamal Adams had an issue with in New York. But this isn't the Legion of Boom. This is not anything close to the Legion of Boom. And I know Richard Sherman's unsigned. He's not going back there. It's just this defense is going to be poorly. This is going to be a poor defense, and I know Carlos Dunlap made a huge difference last season, but they need more help. Losing KJ Wright's going to be huge if he doesn't re-sign with the team. Bobby Wagner can't do it all by himself. You mentioned those terrible cornerbacks. The best one, they lost. I think they lost both Griffins.
They did. They did.
So, I mean, what's left?
DJ Reed, Akella Witherspoon, and Pierre Desir.
They brought in Quandre Diggs. I mean, this is going to be a bad defense, especially on the back end.
Oh, my gosh. Play action is going to kill them. So this is our we finished the NFC. It took us like 4 months to do it. Not really, just something. It seemed like forever because we give you quality over quantity. We could have sped through it and done it in a few weeks. Probably best we didn't do that. But, hey, this is the easiest job Anthony ever had. Next week, I'm going to be on vacation, so he'll be able to have the low bar. I said he'll be able to replace me with somebody, give you an entertaining
You're
show next week.
Irreplaceable.
Yeah. Until the minute turns to the next 5:13 and we're good. 6:13 on Central Time. Anyway, so next week I will be away on vacation. Anthony, I'm sure we'll have an upgraded host here, and you'll be looking forward to hearing that. But Anthony, what's going on with you right now?
Listen, all the preparation on my end is going towards, obviously, the football season and everything else, but we have the Mental Health Podathon coming up on July 9th. Jim will be there. It's going to be led off by Matthew Berry. We're going to have a ton of guests. Hayden Hurst himself will be there representing the Hayden Hurst Foundation. 24 hours of guests and stories about football and also about breaking the stigma against mental health, which is really why we're all going to be there.
Yeah, please support this. This is just when we as a fantasy community, Anthony and Michael are the ringleaders here, and they are definitely raising the bar along with people like Scott Fish, just making the world a better place. We love football, but when we can bring awareness, we can make the world better. That's what Anthony and Michael are doing. So be as supportive as possible. Retweet when they have stuff that comes out about this. Do whatever you can to make this successful so it hopefully helps some people. For me, again, I'm going to be away for about a week or so. I need a little break from football before we get into the big July move when I get back to my SiriusXM gig. I have researched everything I can research, so I think I need to get away from the research for a week. But I will look forward to being back in 2 weeks if Anthony will have me. If his replacement for me next week hasn't Wally pipped me out of a job or whatever, that'll be fine. But for Anthony Servino at The Real NFL Guru, I'm Jim Coventry at Jim Coventry NFL. Everybody have a phenomenal rest of your day.